council and direct our clerk to take roll.
All right, Councilmember Sanchez is on her way.
On her way.
Councilmember Flores?
Here.
Councilmember Watson is absent with notice. Mayor Pro Tem Cortez?
Here.
And Mayor Kimball?
Here. Thank you. Everyone, please stand and join Councilmember Flores. She leads the flag salute.
Salute pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And do we have Pastor Lopez? I invite you to come forward for our invocation, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Lord Jesus, thank you for the blessings. Thank you for the ability and the honor to serve you, to serve our community. Thank you for the freedom we have in our country, states, and city. We recognize that we have all things because of your mercy and grace. You are good no matter what we go through. I pray for the mayor of this city, for each member of the board, and for all the personnel who works for Lindsay. Lord, give them wisdom to guide our city and to be good administrators. Give them a heart of justice and true need for our people. Also, the ability to work together in harmony even when they have disagreements. I pray for this meeting they're about to have so they can respect each other and never forget that we're here to represent our people, our community. Lord, I ask you for the blessings upon our city, our authorities, and this meeting. In the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you very much. Our next item is public comment. The public is invited to comment on any subject under the jurisdiction of the Lindsay City Council. Speakers should give the clerk a filled-out speaker card and clearly state their name at the podium to begin. Speakers shall be limited to 3 minutes each with no more than 30 minutes for the total comment period unless otherwise indicated by the mayor. Does anyone wish to address the council tonight?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, Lansing, California. My name is Eric Sinclair, Sinclair Oil Corporation, KPH Fox 26, the founder of Target, and I also paid for the Walmart distribution center in Porterville. One of the things that I wanted to speak on tonight was ICE. And I'm for ICE. ICE is the updated version of a well-regulated militia. And if you're familiar with a well-regulated militia, it's in our Constitution. And I stand behind ICE. And obviously I'm with the people that founded ICE. I would like to take this opportunity to share an idea that every city can adapt to their own. And save a little money at the same time. Take a couple of days out of the month, turn your city's lights off, save money. Use that money to pay more police officers for your police departments. Use that opportunity to allow them to make rank inside your police departments. Those nights will be mandatory. Thank you again. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to address the council under public comment?
Good evening. My name is Mercy Aveda.
I'm here to address the city council, whose job is to oversee the city administration and the caretakers of our city funds. A month ago, you approved a full-time finance manager when this year the city declared us functionally bankrupt. So why approve a full-time position that carries more strain on our budget, such as meeting our PERS obligation? Also, I mentioned a month ago that it is well known in our community that you hire top management positions that come from a certain background, a certain religion. And I think you need to really look at that and see how we are hiring, what the hiring process is. And also, if you are looking at the current operators of the Friday night market, because there's been a lot of deficiency in how that's carried out, especially when you outline some of the things we would not be doing at the market. For example, the areas that they're not supposed to be at, and also regarding taking care of our businesses who have a right to be in front of their business to have a booth there. So please take a good look at what you guys are doing. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to address the council? Seeing no one, we will close public comment period and move on to our next item, which is council reports. City council members report on recent or upcoming events. Anything to report tonight?
Well, I got a reminder about the covering for the playground. So I let them know that I would bring it up and hopefully follow up on that to see where we're at. I also on the, I guess, the Spanish station, the Univision, that little cable box was in the news. And I think we need to really take care of it and be aggressive about it, because it's not good.
May I respond?
Sure.
We've done everything short of filing a lawsuit against them. When Univision approached the city, we gave them a press release on that. And they had indicated, we've come to council several times saying that we've reached out to them. Mm-hmm. They say they're coming. They come for a day. They disappear. They don't come at all. And interestingly, this morning I saw two vehicles out there, and they're going gangbusters on it. We'll see whether or not. I hate to make promises now because they haven't delivered. But know that we have even shot videos and sent it to senior people in their organization. We've done everything short of taking legal action against them.
Okay. All right.
That will
be it.
Thank you.
So it's just good to see everybody here, and I don't have anything to report. Want to share that, I'm kind of telling myself here, but these last couple of days I've been out at the Wellness Center since like 5:30 in the morning, and it's amazing to see how many people are out there already walking in our park, working out in the Wellness Center, using the pool, both the heated therapy pool and the swimming pool. So I never thought that people were up that early, because I usually am not. So it's very nice and motivating to see them, so hopefully I'll continue on that stride there. And then I was just going to piggyback on what Yolanda was saying. I saw the video that Univision put out, and I think even though we know it's not a city thing, of course the community thinks it is, because the roundabout was, you know, approved by city. So, and I know we've done this in the past, but I would, you know, maybe bring up that we should put out another press release or Facebook post or something for the community, just to remind them it's not a city thing. It was something out of our control, like we've mentioned before. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up, because it does kind of, you know, I take it personal, because it's like, you know, we've tried everything possible. We didn't want that to happen, and we've been pursuing it, and people still think it's us when it's not us. So just a suggestion. And that's it. Thank you. Right. Thank you. Well, I attended the City Selection Committee meeting held on the 17th, and I was voted in as the new Small Cities Representative to LAFCO. And Martha Flores, the Porterville Mayor, was selected to represent the large cities. So, change on the LAFCO board. I was interviewed in front of City Hall last week by members of TCAG team, and Bill was there as well. They're putting together a public relations video on Measure R and filming in all the cities in the county about Measure R projects. So it was pointed out that thanks to Measure R, Lindsay has received $5 million for projects that we could not have done otherwise, including the entire repaving of Tulare Road, 2 miles of Tulare Road, the pedestrian pathways to give kids safe routes to Roosevelt School, and repaving of our downtown, and as well as the 2 roundabouts that have been at least partially supported with Measure R. So that's all I have to report. Bill, staff report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, Council. Let's see, let me start here. Our water system, our water plant's producing a little over 1,500 gallons per minute. That's a good thing, moving a lot of water out of the canal. Mike, how often are we having to backwash right now? Every 3 days? We'll take it. There have been some times we've had to backwash every day. And as you think about water utilization, and forgive me for over-explaining some of this stuff, but I think it's important we understand. You get the filters, and so the water comes out of the canal, it's turbid, it's carrying sediments and soils and things, and it has to go through these filters. The filters start plugging, we have to backwash. Every time we backwash, we go through an acre foot of water. That's over 300,000 gallons. So we love it when things are calm and we can backwash once a week. There was a time earlier this spring with all the water coming out of the mountains and so forth. We were backwashing nearly daily, Mike. So 3 days we'll take it right now. We hope to get it up to a week. But the more water we can pull out of the canal, the less air we're going to be pulling out of the ground from our well sites, and the fewer complaints we're going to have, and hopefully happier residents here. So it's heading in the right direction. Wells 14 and 15 are being available and used as needed. Probably they'll get fired up some this week because it's going to be so stinking hot. People are going to be wanting to use water out there. So, but we're getting out there. We're flushing the hydrants to try to blow the air out. And Mike and his team are working on short and long range solutions to help remove some of that air from the system that's being pulled out of the ground. It doesn't come from the canal water, only when we pump it out of the ground. Let's see here. Staff will be presenting 2 applications for funding of technical studies to the IRWIM on both July 24th and August 13th. The 2 project studies that are proposed are the disinfection byproduct mitigation. That's a report we send out every quarter. We have an obligation to try to find a solution for that. And a regional water treatment plant. That's one of the concepts with the grants that you're hearing talking about at the state level, ways to get water out to disadvantaged communities, you know, locating these major plants that can help Lindsay, say, and maybe Tonyville, El Rancho, and some of these other communities. The DBP study estimate is $71,000, and the regional plan estimate, these are planning studies, is $160,000. The funding being pursued is Prop 1, disadvantaged community committed funding. So we're heading down that path. Mike will present that. We'll see how we do at the IRWIN level. Water conservation update. We are increasing the use of our surface water by nearly 60%. That's a good thing. And we've decreased the amount of groundwater that we have used by 58%. So we're heading in the right direction there. We want to use as little water as we can out of the ground. So keep snow and keep raining, please, and we'll keep doing that. I probably don't need to address the roundabout project now since we've already talked about it. Rehab overlay Cape Steel street projects. It's something that I know it's near and dear to council's hearts as it is to our residents. Public notice for the 9 street projects was in today's Porterville Recorder. It's taken a while to get all the data together to make that happen, but it was in today's Porterville Recorder. Bid packages will be distributed to interested contractors. Notices will be sent directly as well. Bids are set to open on August the 14th. Project durations are 20 and 45 days to completion. So once we get people to bid on it, we've got qualified people that can do it, it'll go quick. It'll go real quick. So hopefully you'll see some results real soon, Council. Phase 1 environmental study for a potential transit center. We've got 3 proposals in for the Phase 1 part. And it's just to make sure that there are no contaminants out there in the soil that we might get stuck with should we just buy it without doing that. So we have those proposals in. We want to bring that back to council on August the 13th to be authorized to go out and get that phase one done. Once it happens, then we can take the steps to acquire the property. Tulare County Area Transit will be presenting a proposed South Valley route update to Council on August the 13th. Mike and I met with them earlier this week. I guess that would be yesterday. And there are going to be some small changes in Lindsay to improve efficiencies, to try to do some cost savings. I think it's going to cost us a little bit more, but the level of service that it's going to improve is quite a bit. And it's a regional thing. It's happening as far south as Ducor, Porterville, and so it'll be interesting. Hopefully we won't get into too much detail, but we're trying to provide the best service that we can to our residents. And transit is something that is a struggle. We don't manage our own transit intentionally here. It's a struggle to make it pencil and provide the support that you need to provide to people who need that. So it'll be good to have them here. And then you can ask them some questions as well. Let's see. Cal Recycle, there was a conference call that took place today. They're going to conduct a site visit in the next 30 days as a follow-on to today's conference call. And this is about where we've got to do organics recycling and a variety of things and how we manage things and try to, bottom line, divert things away from the landfills. And it's kind of some good news. We don't have anything hard in writing yet, but we had a meeting today, staff did, with an area dentist representative who would like to take the old Inglesby nursery site out on Hermosa and turn it into a dentist office. So we support that. It's an appropriate use for the Central Commercial Zoning District. It'll require a site plan review. They're going to demo the existing building, propose some sort of new structure there, come in with elevations and things and bring view. And we're pretty excited about it, and I think that would be really great to have happen there. So we look forward to seeing how that unfolds. Dollar General, some of us remember that. They are moving that project forward. We expect to have plans submitted within 20 to 30 days. So it's taken them a while to get some things done, but they are moving that forward. From our Wellness Aquatic Group, Lindsay Wellness Center Programming Committee meeting was scheduled for August the 12th, 2019. And Councilmember Sanchez, I have some responses to your questions that you had provided, and to yours as well, Councilmember Flores, at the last meeting. So I'll hit that later in tonight's meeting. Wellness is collaborating with the Lindsay PD to host a national night out event on August the 6th at the Aquatic Center. It would be free to the community to swim in the movie Zootopia. There'll be free hot dogs, chips, and drinks while supplies last. Public swim-themed Wednesdays, July 24th, tomorrow, totally 80s, and July 31st, back to school. Each day we'll have free snacks and or giveaways while the supplies last. Youth Fall Soccer League is scheduled to begin on September the 2nd. And July 25th will be Summer Night Lights, free swim, late skate at the Lindsay Aquatic Center, 7:30 to 10. Lots of other details. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Council.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions for Bill at this time? Okay, then we will move on to our next item, which is our consent calendar. Routine items approved in one motion unless an item is pulled for discussion. We have four items: the City Council meeting minutes from July 9th, Resolution 1948, reassigning retirement plan 457B trustees, warrant list for July 1st through July 16th, and support of Senate Bill 2012, Restoring Local Control Over Public Infrastructure Act.
I think I would like to further discuss our retirement plan. I don't know what that's about.
Okay, so you're requesting that we pull item 2 for discussion. And is everyone okay with the other 3? Can you make that a motion to approve 1, 3, and 4?
A motion to approve 1, 3, and 4.
Thank you. Is there a second? Is that good? Let's see, the resolution is 2. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. So, Brett, probably, item
sure.
2.
So, the 457B plan is a retirement plan that we have for senior employees. And with that, we have trustees that are eligible to sign documents for that type of thing. Ray Knudsen and Bill Ziegler are the trustees right now. And Maria has retired, and Bill's retiring soon, and so we need to replace those with new trustees so that we can continue to manage those funds there. We are also transitioning from Lincoln Financial that holds the 457 right now over to Empower. That's something that we brought to council several months ago. And that is scheduled to finish the 90-day transition around September 10th or 11th is when they'll finally go live on their side. And that's the set that the county uses. So to our councilmembers, maybe if you remember.
What type of impact will it have on the retirement system? The change. There has to be something.
Going to empower or mm-hmm. this particular item?
Going to empower.
I think it's going to enhance the employees' access to information. The part of the system that I really like is it allows them to bring in CalPERS and other information as well mm-hmm. and see all of it in one place. Whereas now they're looking at separate locations. And so I think this ease of access is going to be a really nice positive, and it's less expensive than Lincoln, and get us a third party administrator where right now we have to do some of that ourselves. So it's saving all the way around.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion on Resolution 1948, or is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Flores.
Second.
Second by Cortez. Will the clerk please take roll?
Council Member Flores.
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Cortez.
Aye.
Council Member Sanchez.
Aye.
And Mayor Kimball.
Aye. Okay, motion carries. Item 4 is Resolution 1948, Annexation of Water Treatment Plant. And it will be a public hearing, first reading of Ordinance 577, Pre-Zoning Water Treatment Plant. So that's like two different things. We have a resolution and an ordinance.
Correct.
Okay. Bill, would you present?
Yes, ma'am. Let me get caught up there. When I find my agenda, it got rearranged for me. Bear with me just a moment. So I can start talking, and you've got that up already. So the city of Lindsay is the only city in the county that does not have jurisdiction over its wastewater treatment facility. I think we've got about 110 acres out there, and it's in the county. But what does that mean? Normally it doesn't mean too much. However, if you want to have construction happen out there, by rights the county could send their building inspectors out there, collect fees and so forth. We have a great working relationship with them. They haven't done that. But there are a couple of projects that are proposed for this area, and it's in the city's best interest to have this within the city limits to capture any kind of revenues that get generated. So that's the real reason behind doing this. If something were to develop, it would be good for the city to have full control over it. And let me get to it here. Let's see. Government Code Section 56.742 little a states that non-contiguous territory not exceeding 300 acres may be annexed into the city when it is located within the same county, is owned by the city, and is being used for municipal purposes. That's the only real regulation that we have here. Generally, we're not allowed to do what's called an island annexation or a peninsula annexation. This is an exception. So we are allowed to do so. Staff feels that this is in the best interest of the city and its residents. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. You can put the next slide there, Jack. And that's the actual area. You can see dimensions. You've got rural residential property surrounding it, some ag land, that kind of thing.
It's been a while since I've been out there, but are we currently utilizing the entire that entire piece? And so there is still availability for future development on the property.
The idea is there's a closure plan requirement on that, and my personal hope for development would be to help us address the closure plan requirements. That the north end of it you can't really do anything with unless a closure plan is put in place.
Because it's the site of the old brine pond.
Right.
The olive plant. Oh, okay.
We're talking about back to the 80s, Mike?
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
So over 40 years ago.
Any other questions?
Isn't that ground contaminated, though?
Correct. That's why a closure plan is required.
So how is that
There's a definition of ground contamination versus groundwater contamination.
So which is it?
So the groundwater was identified as being high nitrite, high conductivity, mm-hmm. high in TDS. I don't know that there's been soils lab work done to determine exactly if there's with contamination, per se, in soils. So ground versus groundwater, and then be careful with that terminology.
What the state is wanting to do is to prevent the infiltration of rainwater to go through the soil and reach the groundwater tables, and so they wanted to see some means of sealing the north end of that. And so our hope would be, if we can get a project out there, that would be one of the conditions of that project, would be to address that concern, to address that issue, to seal that, to keep the rainwater from contaminating.
From my understanding, I mean, it's been at least 25, I think it was the early 90s.
Early 90s. It was before I came.
When they closed it.
1994.
And to this point, we haven't been able to get, any sealing, but cementing it or asphalting it all or something like that would be the ideal.
It's an expensive process to do.
So where are we going to get the money to do that?
Well, that's why you would have it developed. That would be a condition of the development, to have them take care of that. We don't have the money to do it. That's why it hasn't happened thus far.
Any grant proposals in the future to cover that?
For that, I would question the state's willingness to do that. But with the project that's being proposed, I think there will be grant opportunities for that project. The other thing I did not mention is part of this process, this annexation, is what's called pre-zoning it. And it would be zoned RCO, which is resource conservation and open space, which is appropriate for a wastewater treatment facility, a water plant, that sort of thing.
The public hearing, is that to be on the resolution or the ordinance or both?
The
or
ordinance.
What? The ordinance. Yes. Okay. So we can go ahead and consider a motion for resolution 1946, where we would request that LAFCO consider annexing the
correct
property to the Lindsay city limits. And that, so that's a resolution, that one, the first,
okay,
the first action.
I would encourage council to go with your ordinance first to get public comment on that, because if you're not going to approve the ordinance, the resolution doesn't really matter.
Well, okay. Whatever way,
Mark,
that's
yep.
fine. All right. So do you need to say anything more about the ordinance? The ordinance basically is how we're going to zone it.
Yeah. Well, the ordinance is to get council's approval to take this to LAFCO for annexation. We provided the code allowing us to do so. It makes sense. Every other city in the county has theirs within their city limits, and so we're not doing anything that hasn't been done before. And in fact, it's encouraged by LAFCO. Because the city owns the property, typically if you were annexing something that was owned by a variety of different residents, you would have what's called a protest hearing if they didn't want to be annexed. We have it. We're asking that the protest hearing be waived. It just speeds up the process a little bit. It's not the end of the world if they do one, but we're asking that they annex this and that they waive the protest hearing.
Well, so my little bit of confusion is I thought the ordinance was only about the zoning. And the request for annexation was the resolution.
The resolution, it says to initiate the annexation.
Well, the ordinance requires the public hearing. And it authorizes the our planners to do to make changes to the zoning map should it be adopted, to show that it's RCO zoned. So I think you can deal with them both at the same time. It's one process. We're going
to
pre-zone
it. LAFCO has to have the zoning before they consider the annexing.
Well, they're going to have it all at the same time.
Yeah, it'll be one package, basically.
Okay, so how do we proceed? Do I have a public hearing?
Yeah, you can open a public hearing and see if anybody has any comments on it.
All right. Hereby open the public hearing for ordinance number 577, which is an ordinance relating to annexation of the wastewater treatment properties and zoning it as
RCO.
RCO.
Resource conservation and open space.
If there are anyone here tonight who would wish to speak as a proponent of this, they would be permitted to speak first and may do so at this time.
My name is Eric Sinclair, and I'm for this annexation. Rezone it. Get it done. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak in favor of? Seeing no one, if anyone wishes to speak in opposition to this ordinance, they may do so at this time. Seeing no one, then we will close our public comment period and bring the item back before the council for any further questions or discussion or consideration of motion.
We have to read this, right?
No? Yeah, for the ordinance, which that's the
okay, that's whatever page that is.
Page 14 in your printed packet. Is the resolution. So
the resolution just needs a motion. And then we have an ordinance that's on the back of this page. Yeah.
So do we do the motion altogether? So
you can do it as one. So it would be approval of the resolution 1946, and then.
And then it needs to read the
stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, and then also you can tack on waiver of the ordinance 577. Pass that to the second reading.
Mm-hmm. So I move that we approve ordinance 1946, and I propose that the council declare the first reading of ordinance number 577, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Lindsay adopting pre-zone 1928, pre-zoning territory comprising of the city wastewater treatment plant located at a portion of the south half of Section 3, Township 20 South, Range 26 East, Mount Diablo Base in Meridian, in the County of Tulare, in the State of California, and waive the reading of the ordinance in full. And, okay, that's good. So
and the
we
first
have,
was resolution.
We have a motion to approve resolution for 1946 and to adopt ordinance number 577. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion by Cortez, second by Flores. Would the clerk please call roll?
Councilman Cortez?
Aye.
Sorry, Mayor Pro Tem Cortez. Councilman Flores?
Aye.
Councilman Sanchez?
Aye.
And Mayor Kimball?
Aye. Thank you. Motion carries 5-0. Item 5 is a study session for accessory dwelling ordinances, presented by our contract planner.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. This evening we wanted to talk with you a little bit about a new ordinance that we've been working on to amend the accessory dwelling unit ordinance in the city. So, go to the next slide.
Jack, if you want to have her the mouse, she can just go through it too.
So there are many components to a zoning ordinance, and one of them is the special use standards. So as it stands, the City of Lindsay does have an accessory dwelling unit ordinance in that section, but we need to amend it to come into compliance with state law. So, just a little bit of background. A secondary dwelling unit is one that has its own kitchen, living area, bathroom, and a separate entrance that shares a lot with a larger primary dwelling. It can be a separate structure, what we call detached,
or it can be a portion of the main structure that would be attached. That can be done as an addition or even just repurposing some existing rooms in the home. So you can see in this picture down below, there's two separate entrances available. Other names that have been used in the past include secondary dwelling unit, backyard cottage, granny flat, or mother-in-law quarters. So if you've heard those before, this is what we're talking about. So some differences that an accessory dwelling unit includes in the definition is that it is not a duplex, so it would be an accessory dwelling. It's not in the same structure and size, and it wouldn't be exact, two exact units that you could tell one is a primary dwelling and one is an accessory dwelling. It does need to have a separate entrance and have cooking facilities, a bathroom, and there are some limits. It can be a maximum of 1,200 square feet or less if it's detached, and then a limit, and for attached or detached, it's limited to no more than 50% of the main home. So the square footage has to be truly accessory to the primary. So according to state law, we cannot prohibit them. They have to be done through an administrative approval process. We can no longer, the state imposes some limits on the required parking that we're allowed to require. We cannot require separate meters, but the state does allow us to require property owners to live on site in one of the units. So the state has...
Sorry. Yeah, that's okay. Mm-hmm. About the meters.
Mm-hmm.
We've had several complaints back a couple of years back about the separate meters. So you're saying that no longer exists?
So the state is basically implementing new regulations on cities and counties and jurisdictions that allow accessory dwelling units to be built more easily. So certain requirements, such as requiring second meters, are no longer something we can require because they're trying to encourage housing because the state of California is in a housing crisis. There's just not very much affordable housing. It might not feel like that in Lindsay, but this is a state law, so we need to accommodate it.
According to the state law, they cannot be charged twice.
So basically, some ordinances would require that an accessory dwelling unit have separate utilities, water, sewer, everything has to be separate from the primary dwelling. And because of that, that was a burden that caused a lot of expense. And so jurisdictions are no longer allowed to require that of accessory dwelling units. So if the owner wants one utility bill that pays for both, then that's what they get. But if they want two separate meters, they can, because, you know, then their renter pays one bill and they pay one bill, but they're not required to have that installed.
So that would be up to the owner, though, to decide right. If they want 2 meters.
If they want to do it or not, yeah.
There's no prohibition against 2 meters, just the city can no longer require it.
Mm-hmm. Or bill. Right.
If there's only 1 meter... It gets built on the one, all of it gets built on the 1 meter. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's no difference in, there wouldn't be any difference in like usage. It's either on one bill or it's on 2 bills.
But that hasn't been the case here.
This is a new law.
Yeah. So are we going to, you know, go along with this new law and really center on the residences that have only 1 meter but are being charged twice?
I don't know people with 1 meter being charged twice. What we will do is whatever it is we're supposed to charge per meter, that's what we'll charge. We're going to comply with state law to go back and start looking through things. That's not staff's intent right now, but we are going to comply with state law. So if you want to put a second dwelling unit on your property, and if you want a meter, you can have it. If you don't want a meter, we're not going to put it on there, and we're going to, you know, there's a flat rate that you bill for your water meter, and then there's a usage by the number of gallons that you're using. That's how it'll be billed.
So once this gets out, I know you're going to have a lot of people coming in. So will it be taken care of immediately?
And they shouldn't be billed.
They shouldn't be receiving
duplicate bills.
They have been.
Okay, but if there's two units and they're being billed for their separate use, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody comes in essentially today and says, "Hey, I would like to put a secondary."
No. These are existing homes.
Right. So that in that case, when somebody's getting double billed,
mm-hmm.
if they're truly getting double billed, that should happen anyway, regardless of this law.
It sounds like a different issue.
Yeah, that's a totally separate issue.
Okay.
That's not to say that they're not getting two bills, but they shouldn't be getting two bills for the same usage.
Yeah, they are. Okay, thank you.
So the state law does allow jurisdictions to allow for one additional parking space, but it does restrict that we cannot ask for that if the proposed site is within half a mile of a bus stop or the accessory dwelling unit is attached to the main residence. So this is something that the city can or doesn't have to ask for. So we were, as a workshop study session, we wanted to ask the council's opinion on that. Whether that's something you would want to require of accessory dwelling units.
So I think they should have a parking space
for
the accessory unit. Otherwise, they're just more cars on the street, which are already pretty impacted.
But isn't that state law?
So state law allows us to require one stall. So some ordinances in some cities were requiring two covered parking stalls.
Yeah,
or depending on the size of the accessory dwelling unit, they had more burdensome parking requirements. So the state has said the maximum you can require now is one stall. So, but you don't have to require it. And you can't require it of sites that are within the bus stop half mile and attached.
Or if it's attached.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we can write the ordinance so that it does require that parking stall.
That parking space doesn't have to be like a garage or...
No, it does not.
It has to be somewhere to park your car off street.
Mm-hmm.
Off the street.
Mm-hmm.
If you're building a second unit.
Mm-hmm.
If you want it that way. As we have it now, we have required extra parking, covered parking. That's gone. That can no longer be required. And you know, if you drive around Elmwood and some of the streets that run north and south through town, many of our streets, in fact, you've got residential overcrowding and the streets are lined with cars. We can't really get a street sweeper down there effectively. So we wanted to ask you that question. Staff was thinking that you would want to have that parking space, but that's a council decision. You have flexibility here.
Okay.
Did you have a consensus on that? Or were you thinking about that?
So we have to
whether to require one parking space. Well, they're just asking for input as the ordinance is prepared.
But think if they're going to build.
If you're going to build like a 1,200 square foot home in the back, I would think they need some place to park their car. But you know,
I could add
rent
to
it
council,
out to someone. Like they need a place to park.
There's
their
a
car.
Parking schedule that says how many parking spaces you have. Like per bedroom or per unit. So it's not an arbitrary thing where, for example, the house that's on the right in your graphic, maybe they've got two or three parking spaces. You know, they've got a driveway that's 25 feet deep and it's double wide. They might already have enough parking spaces to satisfy your parking schedule, you know, and your parking ordinance. It may already be there. But the question here is you say, yeah, I want to make sure that if they're bringing something in, that I've got enough parking spaces to cover the existing dwelling unit plus one more for the accessory dwelling unit if it's not within a half mile of bus stop or attached to a main residence, or you don't want that.
Yeah.
Is that a half mile radius or just a half mile street length?
I'm sure it's about getting there.
I think it's radius. We can check the law, though.
Might not already be covered with that, yeah.
So we would intend to write the ordinance as state law allows us, and we would include the wording that the law has as far as those exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we would most likely present to you an ordinance that does require an additional parking stall, and then when that item comes before you, it's up to you if you...
It has to be a stall, even, just based on the... drive approach or something? You mean for a three-car garage? Well, I don't know. Is it say stall? Because stall is like...
I just call it that. It's parking unit.
Parking driveway.
It has to meet a certain size requirement.
You could. You could park off the alley. You could park, you know, off the street. It just depends on where it is. So how about we bring it to you and we'll bring you some more information, maybe show you a graphic, and you can determine if you want it or not.
Okay, the next requirement that the state does allow us to... jurisdiction on is whether we require a property owner to live on site. So that was one way that cities have been able to manage the accessory dwelling units that are being built in their within their city limits by requiring that an owner live on site. It would, in some people's eyes, meet more of the requirement of supplementing income for someone who's living there rather than additional rent.
The landlord that's just renting out two properties.
Yes.
And there's a blight component to it, perceived blight component.
Well, that would also, like, raise interest in people wanting to maybe do more of this and even get overcrowded. If they didn't have to live on the property, right?
Yeah, so in the past when these were very first started coming about, they were traditionally called granny flats, and so there was some jurisdictions that required only family members live in those accessory dwelling units, and the Supreme Court or state, I'm not sure, at some point decided that that was too restrictive. You could not require that. But they did allow jurisdictions to say, yes, you must have an owner on site. And then the pushback or the other side of the argument might be, Steve presented an example to me where a home was left to the children of a homeowner that had passed away, and all of his children lived at least out of the city, maybe even out of the state. And so they could no longer, operate, rent. They could not rent both of those pieces and still maintain ownership of the home. They could sell it. Yeah. So it's something that you have the ability to decide on if you want to require it or not.
I think it's good to keep requiring it at this point in time. Reduce blight and those absentee landlord issues that we have a lot of already.
It's overcrowding as well. Then people turn it into a business.
Right, turn it into a business instead of extended family or boosting your income a little bit.
So that's enforced by requiring what's called a covenant or some sort of agreement between the property owner, and it gets recorded against the property so that anyone who purchases the property in the future would be notified of that requirement and that they would be asked to maintain it.
Come up in a title report.
Yeah. It's not easily enforced, but it can help.
Yeah, it's hard to follow up on that for sure.
Yeah. Do you guys have any other questions for me?
Does the council have direction on that? I'm not clear. Do you want to require owner occupancy or on one of the on the site or no?
I think we should keep requiring it until the state tells us we can't anymore.
Two yes. Is there a third?
I'm not sure. I think that would be okay to have it. I'm not sure about the parking. I don't think we need to require the parking. But owner occupancy, yeah.
Okay. So being that this is a study session, we would present an official ordinance for you guys, for the council to consider when it's time. And at that time, you can make changes to the ordinance if you choose to.
Thank you.
Anything else?
That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know if you get to sit down or not, because the next item. Okay.
I'm ready. Don't touch anything with it yet. we'll be fighting each other.
Okay.
We start? Okay. Good evening. My name is Steve Brandt. I'm also work with Kira at QK, and wanted to do a study session about signs. So let's see. So signs are also part of the zoning ordinance. So how do I do this here? There. So they're one of the more challenging things to regulate. One of the reasons why they are challenging is because you get into First Amendment issues, free speech issues. So we need to make sure that our regulations are not violating anybody's First Amendment rights. There have been a lot of court cases about signs in the past, some of them that have made it to the Supreme Court. And so there is a fairly recent one, 2015, that has kind of changed the way that cities need to look at signs and the way they need to word their sign ordinances. If you follow the Supreme Court at all, you know that they're usually pretty divided. This one was a 9-0 decision, so pretty solid decision on this one. And it came down against the city. In this case, it was the town of Gilbert, which is a city in Arizona. And what it was saying was the city was regulating signs, saying like, well, here's an election sign, and election signs can be this big. Here's a special event advertising sign, and they can be this big. And what the Supreme Court says was you are favoring certain speech over the other because you're saying one sign can be bigger than the other one. And usually the cities regulate signs for two reasons. Safety, you don't want a sign too close to the street or things like that. And also aesthetics, you want your town to look nice. So they were saying you got two signs, but one gets to be bigger than the other. How is that an aesthetics issue? And so what the phrase they use is content-based, which means if you have to read the sign in order to regulate it, you're probably violating somebody's rights. So most sign ordinances, ever since I've been a planner, have always had things like a for sale sign can be this big, a election sign can be this big. And so we need to scrap all of that and have new definitions on how we describe different types of signs. We can still regulate signs, but we regulate them based on... going the wrong way. Oh, this is what I was talking about. We can't... Saying things like garage sale sign, for sale sign, going out of business sign, campaign sign, those are all ways of describing the sign based on what they say. And so we want to get away from that. And so we've come up with some new ways to do that. So what can be regulated? You can regulate the location of a sign. You can regulate its size, the number of signs on a particular site. You can regulate its height. You can regulate the type of materials on how the sign gets built. You can regulate whether a commercial advertising sign is on-site or off-site, and that's a little bit of a deviation from the main argument of being content-based, because you do kind of have to read the sign to find out if it's a commercial sign or not. You can regulate the type of lighting that gets placed on the sign. And for temporary signs, you can regulate the time that it can be somewhere. You can also regulate signs that are on public property different from signs that are on private property. So what we are proposing to cities for rewriting their ordinances is that you kind of divide signs into four categories. And those would be two types of permanent signs and two types of temporary signs. So permanent signs would be signs that are on the building that are permanent and signs that are freestanding, which could be a monument sign or a tall pole sign. So those would be two different types. Then for temporary signs, the same thing. A temporary building sign, which is usually a banner that's attached to a building, or a temporary freestanding sign, which there could be lots of those. Those could be the for sale sign, the election sign, the A-frame sign on the sidewalk downtown, Anything like that would now be considered a temporary freestanding sign. And so what we're going to propose when we give you the draft ordinance is they'll have those categories, and each zone will have different standards for what those types of signs can be in terms of their size, their height, how many you can have, for temporary signs, how long they can be there, and things like that. So the main purpose of this study session was to get you thinking in this different way of how you categorize the different types of signs that are out there and the different types of signs that people want to put up. Because we want to get away from anything having to do with the message. Because if we can say, you know, we're not regulating what it says, we're just regulating how the sign looks, where it's located, how big it is, then the Supreme Court says we're totally within our rights to do that. Now, let me see if I have something else here. Oh, one thing that's come up, signs in the street right-of-way or signs on public property like parks. You think about that a little bit differently because the zoning ordinance is mainly to regulate private property. For public rights-of-way or city-owned property, you have much more control because you actually own that property. So you have the ability to completely eliminate any signs that are not your signs. You can put up signs. You're the owner of the property. But you can say nobody else can put up signs. Or you can have some type of policy that says we're going to allow certain types of signs. The rub is you need to have an appearance of fairness in that so that if you, like, say I'm going to allow this nonprofit to put up a sign in the park, but not this one. There need to be some standards that everyone can follow, and we can help you with that. And I know Bill has some experiences on that, and we can try to shape something to be a start, and then you can let us know how close we got to what you think is the right thing to do.
So would that be a separate ordinance from this one?
It'll be part of the same ordinance. Okay. It'll be in a different section. The sign ordinance is going to be pretty long, and there's going to be a lot of legal stuff in it, and that's partly because of previous court cases. So we're putting things in the code to show that we're not being discriminatory.
Yeah, because I have gotten questions as far as like community groups trying to recruit for different sports.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they want to put up signs on like city property, like at the park or whatever, but I think we need a clear process or standard.
Yeah.
So that it's fair too.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm saying you think about that a little differently, because if it's private property, you're the regulator. You're, as the city, you are telling the private property owner, well, you can do this, but you can't do this. If it's city property, that's your property. So you need to have a policy. What are we going to do with our property? What are we going to let people do on our property?
Question that's come up, Council, is our existing sign ordinance is pretty old, and it's pretty controlling. It's difficult. And so about a year ago, I think, we had a bunch of signs attached to the fencing around the golf course area, now the sports complex. And those signs were removed and returned to the people that had put them up because we didn't have a way to legitimately let them have them there. But if you look at it from a common sense standpoint, if you have something that's community benefit, say, perhaps nonprofit, council might be okay with allowing them to have something there for a set period of time. But that would be something for you to consider as this thing goes forward. Do you want to allow that to happen there? I've been asked about the wind machine in the roundabout. We have an unwritten policy, but we can put it in writing. And that's where we do community benefit nonprofits. You've got OBF, Mazzoli Menudo, Rib Cook-Off, those sorts of things would go up there, some special event like that. And so Steve's saying you have some flexibility in that particular area if you desire to do that.
Sure. Yeah. Because I know that, you know, nowadays we rely a lot on social media, but in reality not everybody in our community utilizes social media. So high traffic areas such as the wind where the roundabout is, the wooden machine, or on Tulare, on either side of the sports complex, are good areas for our residents to see, you know, that they're taking sign-ups for football, soccer, or skimmers, or whatever it may be.
So, yeah, I think that's good, but setting it so maybe only 2 weeks ahead of the event or something like that,
right.
They're allowed to post it, so it's not
in a process, so they would have to come here, so that way we don't have 10 signs out there at the same
right.
time. You know, we give them a date, and then, you know, that's them. They're responsible for putting and taking out.
Yeah. And once your event's over,
get it in. But the calls that I get it, not often,